Sad face, solemn tone. The Proteas came so close. So close. They got a final. They got into a winning position in the final. The entire nation was with them, staring over the precipice of absolute glory. The Cricket World Cup final, it was there. It was there for the taking. And they proceeded to completely fuck it up. So we've all been ejected back into the doldrums of just being Proteas fans, which have kind of felt the same way since 22 off one ball. But on better news, the Boks are playing this weekend. It's a Springbok weekend. Our beloved world champion Springboks at that. They're taking on the plucky Irish. First test this weekend at Loftus-Versfeld. We have the best guest possible to bring this to us. None other than Brian Habana. Let's get into it. Welcome to this week's edition of On The Bounce Show. As I said in the intro, with huge animation, the Springboks are playing. I mean, you say that and straight away you know your weekend's better. Set it straight away, you know, all your friends are excited. Okay. I mean, I don't want to go, like, I want to push the Proteas thing straight away to the side. Well done, guys. I know people lose in sports. I'm not using choker tags or whatever. But to say the Springboks are on this weekend is like saving us. And we've got Brian Habana in the studio for this. Brian, thank you for joining us.
Ben, great to be here. Yeah, lovely to be here.
Thank you.
I really appreciate the flattery that I'm the best guest that you can have as a forecast this weekend. I actually think, given the Dr. Rassi Rasmus Mania, he would probably be the best guest. But as a sloppy second, I'm happy to fill in for that, Ben.
No, Brian, I disagree. Rassi, there's too many eyes on him, right? There's too many press conferences on him. Everyone kind of knows what he's got.
Yeah. No, they don't.
But one-on-one time with you right now is pretty amazing. And I've just got to ask, is your life ambition now to become more travelled than the world's most travelled man, Mr. Gary Player?
Oh, it's definitely not the ambition. I think, firstly, I can't call it the transitional phase anymore. I think I'm really much now into the next chapter of life. Post-retiring June 2018, and geez, been the last 6 years have absolutely flown by. I wake up every morning and I literally just have to pinch myself that I'm still getting to do some really cool things, be involved in certain touch points of rugby. I mean, I had to do my first ever sit-down interview with Josh van der Vlier just a few days ago as a presenter for Sky, which when you retire, you don't actually know. It's such a tough period because you take away everything that you've known for so long. And I think the opportunities that I've been presented with over the last 6 years has just been phenomenal. And I think for that, I'm really lucky. I definitely haven't found the work-life harmony space at the moment. Probably a very MIA dad. Janine, if you are watching this, thank you for being so amazing. I think you look for opportunities and then, you know, when everything comes on your plate, just trying to sort of allocate where you want to allocate your time, which is really difficult. But definitely not trying to outdo Gary Player. I mean, I definitely can't do 1,000.
It's a goal, though. Huh? That's a goal. To travel more than him, that would be it.
No, that is not the goal, unfortunately. I think Gary Player, not only do I not want to travel more than him, but I'm probably never, ever going to want to equal his 1,000 sit-ups a day at any point, Ben. You can rather go for that challenge.
Yeah, I'll try. It's not a good week for that. But I said, and it sounds like in jest, but you are probably the greatest icon of Springbok rugby because of what you did and internationally and what you carried on. So when you say your transition to the next phase, there's no like coincidence that you really got cool stuff to do. I mean, you still work with probably more brands than current players do. You're still probably more involved in the game than current players kind of were.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a weird transition, but also kind of exciting. Like you are now, this is how cool this guy is.
Tell me.
Like when Springbok is finish their careers, they're holding thumbs for the Supersport punditry position. Brian goes international. So, I mean, this week, what is your week looking like this week?
So this week, again, very fortunate that, I have been able to, honestly, infiltrate the UK broadcasting environment, working for the likes of Channel 4 in my first year out of rugby was really great and an easy entry point into the world of broadcasting because the likes of a Matt Pearce, Nyani Shimangi, Skalkberger, they make it potentially look so easy. And I think every rugby player steps out of your career as a professional athlete and then you think you can do it just because you were there. Yeah. But there's a lot of key learnings that you have to take. And this week was one where I got to sit down and actually interview someone for the very first time in a sort of anchor presenter role.
It's tough interviewing sports people, huh?
Well, it's not. So what is nice, because you're a former player and where I felt I really made a great impact as an athlete while I was playing, is I forged relationships and I was there was always a friendly engagement with other players. So you sit down with someone like Josh Van der Vlier, who could immediately potentially put up walls. There could be an animosity because of what the general feeling between the Irish and the South African public is. But, you know, all of a sudden, the guard gets let down. You get easier access to more authentic storytelling and authenticity in that engagement, which is brilliant. And I then even sat down and I messaged Sarah Algan-Easterby, who I did some broadcasting work with the Lions in 2021 for Sky. And I said, yes, you know, I actually hate you presenters because you make it look so easy. And I had to unfortunately send the producer an apology, because the first question that I had on, I was just so nervous, I forgot to ask about the first question we'd briefed each other upon. I was like, Taco, I'm so sorry. I stuffed up. I was too engaging. But learnings, and it is really cool, I think, to be able to work with a different environment to what we're used to in South Africa. And, you know, SuperSport globally are probably one of the best content platforms in the world. But we're able to get expert insight into another environment, another fan base, a different way of thinking has been great. So this week started Josh Van der Vlier on Tuesday, which I had to do a lot of prep for, stats. Found out that he played scrummy as a schoolboy up until the age of 16 before moving to
France. But I mean, all South African kids were versatile, right?
Yep. Well, South African surname, not South African descent. So his grandparents actually come from Holland. And they moved back there they moved to Ireland in the early 60s, if the stats, to open up like a factory, which is brilliant. And, you know, Josh and I have gone on, and, you know, his roots are very much, he does not know anything outside of Ireland. But it's then the prep of understanding, you know, what you're going to be interviewing, finding the stats, understand that, you know, he got snubbed in 2016 when he made his debut, missed the tour to South Africa in 2016, got snubbed for the Lions in 2021. So there's certain things, but then to be able to bring people's guard down. So that was Tuesday, did a bit of, so outside of rugby, which I'm grateful for, that life has presented me with opportunities within the sport. There's been a lot of really cool things that has driven me in a totally different way that I honestly, when you end, you don't know what, and now to be finding a different purpose. So PayMeNow is a fintech company that I co-founded with my university roommate in 2019. And we've grown that organization where we were four guys in a garage, that proper Amazon, Apple type story. Mm. We're now 46 full-time staff processing more than 550,000 transactions a month on the platform. We've just gone through our June KPI performance review scorecard process. So, you know, I've got a direct report line of about 14 employees. So I've got to speak to my heads of department, and I've got to sign off on all these things. And you're now no longer just this rugby player in corporate. You're a proper corporate now. And I think that...
Yeah, you're not just the profile to try to close the deal.
Yeah, and the opportunities that, you know, as a shareholder, co-founder in PayMeNow, that my board and trustees and directors allow me to then, you know, still have elements of getting to be involved in rugby. And now I get to sit pitch side, watching the best two teams in world rugby and being able to get insight into that to a UK audience that is absolutely exceptional. So Ben, I've been very lucky. What I have tried to also do, not only through my career, but post it, is create tangible relationships.
Yeah.
And that networking opportunity, you know, has seen me still. And we're not all sponsored by Adidas. This was purely by coincidence. I did not know you guys are going to be wearing Adidas.
Well, I mean, this weekend is the biggest game of the Euros, right? It's Spain versus Germany. Sandita from the start said that Germany are going to win. Yep. I think Spain are going to win. I don't really have a dog in this fight. It's
bigger than France-Portugal.
Bigger than France-Portugal.
Absolutely. You've got the two best scoring teams. Yep. France-Portugal have the ability to put you to sleep. These two teams, Friday at 6. And we'll get to it later in the show. So, Brian, I just got to ask though, because this week is a test match week, So yes, you're there in your current capacity, but you're at Loftus. You're a Loftus hero. You've had some of your best life and sporting memories at Loftus. Yeah. Are there any things that you kind of miss about not being a player? Because it's still kind of fresh, right? I mean, you're still an athletic kind of guy. You're not that old yet.
No, we've gone over the 40s, Ben, so you're now getting to the next phase. And this generation of Springbok rugby players, you know, I was very fortunate to be a part of the start of their careers. And to now see someone like Willie LaRue, you know, 7 caps away from becoming a test centurion, I think the average test cap of the forward pack is over 69, I think.
Incredible.
For this weekend. And, you know, I was there at the start for most of them. And you do miss the sport. And you know, that's a question that constantly comes up with a lot of former athletes. It's like, oh, do you miss it? And of course you miss it. You're like, nothing gives you the adrenaline rush as running out onto Loftus, wearing your Springbok jersey, representing yourself, your family, your country against the best team in the world. You can't replicate that anywhere in corporate, right? So there's certain elements of the camaraderie, the endorphin rush that you'd now try cultivate in a different perspective within the real world, which is really tough. I probably miss having a daily routine of training, Ben. As you know, you've been trying for 4 years to get me back into some form of anything. And then they did so badly, they exposed me in the worst way possible, put me into Budgie Smugglers on a pink inflatable flamingo, which I'm still being ripped off by Bismarck Duplessis, by the way, Ben. So I thank you very much. And there was a financial gain for that, but the personal loss is potentially a lot more detrimental than what the financial gain was.
Well, I'm glad you've moved on, though.
Glad moved on. So there are, without a doubt, a lot of things you miss. I'm not going to lie to you. I miss the salary.
No.
You know, the real world is pretty brutal. And I think when you're in that bubble of professional sports and, you know, the guys are earning a lot of money now, I was very fortunate to have done really well financially through rugby. But
well, of course, I mean, you still went to France afterwards. Yeah. It wasn't just like that opportunity wasn't there yet.
Yeah, you know, so you could struggle. I'm not complaining. So, you know, I miss, you know, what you get as a rugby player, because the real world is not like that. You don't get these massive lump sums and the adoration. Hey, there's a lot of things that sport gives you that you unfortunately don't get in the business world. But I think for me, being able to find a different purpose and continue to be driven is in one of the skill sets that you learn as an athlete, is that, you know, that discipline, that routine of certain things becomes critically important in, you know, how you step out into the next phase of your life, which has been great. Two boys, 10 and 6 now, and I hate the word balance, because I think, unfortunately, the word balance gets thrown around very easy. The work-life harmony, I'll be the first to admit, my work-life harmony is shoddy. Mm. And I'm trying to put so much into the work element of it now, so that hopefully at a stage in the next 5 to 10 years, I can sit back and enjoy my kids. And as much as I try to give them real presence when I'm there in the environment, you're constantly thinking about how you're growing family now. You know, we have match get. There's all these other things that are on the go. And then you still need to be as professional, constantly get chosen or be selected to be involved with the Sky Sports, ITV, with the, you know, the broadcasting, MasterCard, HSBC, and all these things, which I look back, I wake up some mornings and I pinch myself that, you know, 6 years on from retiring from the game, I've still got a great relationship with Land Rover. 6 years on from retiring, I've got a great relationship with Adidas. I've been on the HSBC Red Polo Gang roster for the last 6 years, and it just is really pinch me stuff. Do I miss the game? 100%. You don't. And I went to go pick up tickets at the Springbok Hotel this week, which was amazing. And you go in there and you miss that sense of purpose of doing something so special that unites a nation. You know, family and I, we do some really cool stuff, giving people their dignity back, financially empowering them. And yes, you make a difference in their lives tangibly, but there's nothing like sport to bring people's true emotion together and string it together in a way that nothing else does. No politics, no religion, no culture. Sport just is brilliant. And you miss that. You miss the ability to know what that feeling of adrenaline rush, you know, running out into Loftus, standing at a stadium with 55,000 South Africans singing your national anthem, having known that you've put in all the hard work, all the effort, all the sacrifice and dedication to be at your best for that 80 to 85 minute period. So yes, do I miss it? But grateful for the opportunities and life that rugby gave me, and the moments I got to take with me from rugby into the next phase of life, which is
absolutely
brilliant. And this Saturday, I being pitch side, so close to every hit, every tackle,
I'm gonna jump on,
you know, every try, and the excitement, you almost vicariously now live through the moments, you know, and you know, because you've been there, what it's like, but you live so intimately in that moment, and there's nothing like live sport as well, which is also really good.
Well, absolutely, it's like life's true reality show. You know, you talk about this thing, this crescendo that goes up to the weekend. You don't know what's going to happen. Like, I remember watching one of the best All Black games that I went to, and it was incredible. You scored two tries right out of nowhere, and then you kind of had to go off. I think it was a concussion.
Whoa.
That was Ellis Park. Brad,
I just told you about preparing your stat sheet.
Brad, you must forget that in our realm, when we prepare for a Springbok match, we're about six beers in.
Yes.
We're probably onto the brandy before halftime. So when 100%. I tell you that you've scored two tries, I've already actually remembered a lot. But that was an incredible game, because everything started off so well.
Yeah.
Eventually the Boks go on to lose that one. It was an incredible test match. Mm. So that high it's like, you know, there's an element of danger as well. This element of disappointment that might happen. Yeah. You know, if you go and, you know, as mere mortals, we'll never understand that, because if we go play a round of golf, we don't care if we're bad or good. We get out of the house. Yeah. That's no,
you
all
do that at all. He definitely cares if he's bad or good.
I know.
No, you do not be that person that takes us very high handicappers to task. No, you are so determined to be good at
Thank
golf.
Thank you, Brian.
Okay.
Thank
well, let's get away from that. Okay, so look, this week I listened to, and I'll always give credit to other podcasts on this show, the SA Rugby Mag podcast with Mark Yohei and Adam Nell. It's a really, really great podcast. Mm. And there was something they said in there was very interesting, is that people were talking about this SA Ireland rivalry, and they were like, there is no rivalry. Before these Oaks beat the All Blacks in Chicago, they were just like the cheerful Oaks on the side, really. Mm. They weren't like the best team.
Not even
they
a were close. Decent. No, they were. I don't know. I don't get it.
And yes, in recent years, they've really, really come on. So now we talk about this rivalry. A rivalry is the All Blacks. A rivalry is England. A rivalry is even Australia. Mm. Like, how do you feel this whole thing when people say, oh, you know, this rivalry is personal now? Is it because there is so much at stake, or is that just a lot of media hype coming into it?
So I disagree with you. I definitely believe it's a rivalry now. And the reason it's a rivalry is because, unfortunately, South Africa have now lost the last three on the bounce against the Irish. Mm. We last beat them in 2016. Rassi, as a coach, has never beaten the Irish in, you know, in the Springbok position. So I think when you talk about rivalries, and I do believe it, it's not just the on-field battles that get considered when you look at why something develops into a rivalry. I think there has now been a lot of talk outside of the field, which has gained a lot of media attention. It's put a lot of players in positions to give sound bites, which have then blown out around the world. So given the fact that we haven't beat the Irish in the last three outings.
Can I just add to that? We don't play them very often. So if you're not a big rugby fan, it's not like every year we're getting beaten here.
No, it's not every year we're getting beaten. Yeah. But the fact that we haven't beat them in the last three outings, that we last beat them in 2016, you know, you want to say they're a rival, firstly, because of the caliber of their rugby. Okay. I think that, and I think we measured the rivalry against the All Blacks because, yes, we play them every year. But the All Blacks set a benchmark and a standard, which, even though Ireland didn't go past the quarterfinals of last year's Rugby World Cup.
Or the ones before that.
Or anyone before that, which, again, that probably didn't.
It's got the threat,
that probably didn't. That probably disqualified them as proper rivals. But because they have been in the top one to three teams in the world in the last 6 to 8 years.
Yeah.
They set a benchmark, and I think when you want to test yourself against the best in the world, and the rivalry against the All Blacks, you know, extends very far back into our history. But no South African that has been around for the last 40 years, maybe not the new, what, it's not Gen Z anymore, it's not Gen Y or
something.
Whatever's after Gen Y and Gen X, right, or Gen Z.
Gen
Y. Gen Millennial, whatever that is. So I was pitch side 2004 when Ron Nogara took that quick tap, which should never have been allowed. But
that was after the ref told John to go talk to his
And John's back was turned, Ron Nogara. So there were sort of elements of negativity and frustration from a South African perspective. We then went on to lose against them in 2009, beat them at the opening of the new Aviva Stadium in 2010, Gio Aplon scoring a great try. And then 2016 happened. You know, they won their first ever test match in South Africa.
Yeah.
Like, their first ever test match. Guys, that just gives you an understanding of where Ireland have got to, having never won a game in South Africa, to now almost be on the precipice of winning a series in South Africa for the very first time. They then went to go on and win a series in New Zealand in their history, you know, a few years later. So a rivalry, I don't think, just comes about because of everything that gets said off the field. Mm. It really comes about by the standard the opposition set. And you want to measure yourself against the best. And it's the number one and two teams in the world at the moment. And that rivalry, I think, is now a real tough one because both Ireland and South Africans in the URC and Champions Cup teams didn't get to a final.
Yeah, tough year.
Right? Now all of a sudden it's okay, who's the better of the teams? Because Leinster lost to a fantastic Bulls side at Loftus mid-June before losing, you know, the final, the Bulls. And now it's like everyone's got this term, who's the best team? The fact that we're not even talking about the All Blacks in the top two teams in the world at the moment, for me, says there's some sort of a rivalry developing in the motions of being a real one. Because, yes, England's a rivalry. Yeah. Where are England in the world currently? You know, if we talk about top, and yes, England got to semi-final and probably should have won. Springboks took their chance extra. But I honestly do believe it's a rival now. Yeah. Because
I have to disagree with Brian O'Bannon. I don't see them as a rival.
Sorry, Sandini, you've said about three words this whole show here.
Good. Yeah, no, I've been waiting humbly to ask, you know, my questions. And my mates made sure that I have to ask you some questions because I went to school in Observatory. I went to Sacred Heart. I will say that for my sins. So they wanted to know. You're a stalwart of Kez. I used it.
There we go.
Stalwart.
Thanks.
Who are your top three favorite Kez athletes ever? Any four. Because I'll give you mine after you go first.
Ooh. Okay. Three. So at school, I'm not going to lie to you. I literally would, if I saw him walking around, because back in those days, I'm not quite sure how old you are. So yeah, I mean.
34, that's fine.
A very long distance away from when I matriculated and been matriculated. But at Kez, when I was there, you used to like walk around and you used to have to walk in single file. So oncoming traffic, you know, literally single file. And I used to look to see where Joe Fenikas was walking.
Told you.
Just to be able to make sure that I was in that line to be able to greet him.
Yeah.
Joe was an absolutely phenomenal schoolboy in every way. His rugby playing ability was ridiculous. He brought so much enjoyment, so much authority.
Yeah.
So Joe would probably be my number one, if I have to say that at Kez. I wasn't there when he matriculated. Malcolm Marks, I think, is someone that is now really, you know, buttoned down the hatches. I love Graham. So I think, so third, I'm going to go tie with Graham Smith, Gary Player. I think I'm going to go tie with those two.
Gary hasn't tied for third in anything in his whole life.
No, that's crazy.
No, he hasn't, so he's going to be pretty negative that he hasn't made top spot. Yeah. I'm going to go Malcolm Marks, and even though he wasn't there when I was there, I just think what Malcolm's done, and the person he is, but Joe was definitely number one by a couple of yards.
Yeah, so I think for me, obviously number three is Graham Smith, just for what he achieved. Sure. Number two, I have to put him there, is with Brian O'Bannon, but number one...
he's sitting right next to you, this is so awkward.
But number one for me will always be Joe Fenikas. Just what he did for schoolboy rugby. People going from other schools just to make sure you come watch him. Big Joe was fantastic as a schoolboy rugby. So shout out to Big Joe.
He's now known Jungle Joe, right?
Yeah, Jungle Joe.
Jungle Joe is Puerto Rico. Yeah, Joe. What a man, huh? Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just going to apologize. He's clearly starstruck. He's just jumped to the final segment of the entire show here.
Jumped to the final segment?
Because we're talking about SA versus Ireland. This is the most anticipated.
Back to build it back.
The most anticipated questions.
I literally was thought he was going to like go into like this rivalry. The
entire country is talking.
But great segue.
Great segue. Just jump in here. Take it on the switch. So, I mean, as much as Sandeep obviously does no interest in SA versus Ireland, I still
do, guys.
Can someone please get him a ticket?
You're prepping.
Maybe go see an experience.
So, Brian, I mean, look, it's two best teams in the world. Yep. Obviously, Ireland haven't played an international game. They came off the URC, they came off the Champions thing. We've played that one game. We tested a few talents here. How much of a thing is these teams playing at altitude now? Because people always ask that question. And you know from obviously playing a lot at Loftus and playing elsewhere in the world, this Irish team coming into this first game here, like how big of a deal will that be in how they perform?
I definitely believe over the last decade or so, this altitude factor has become less of a factor. And I think it's more so if we look at what happened in that final with Glasgow, you know, really outcoming against the Bulls, which was...
Especially with the way they play.
They threw the ball around quite a bit, and Leinster, who lost to the Bulls a week prior, would have potentially given a lot of insight to Andy Farrell in terms of what is necessarily needed for this coming weekend. And unfortunately, it is that one where it's at the end of a long season. There's always the doubts, you know, are the players going to arrive? I think it's going to be an absolute humdinger. Does altitude matter anymore? Probably a lot less than what it did 10 to 15 years ago when the game was, yes, professional, but there was so many more things. So Ireland, and again, having that behind the scenes insight, they've had a staggered arrival in South Africa. So I want to say 80% of their contingent have been in Joburg at the Highveld for the last 10 days already. So it's, you know, what is the science behind Highveld? You know, there's altitude training and all these type of things that have come into play now. I think the abrasiveness of the Springboks is probably the biggest threat that this weekend poses. I definitely think there's going to be no love lost.
100%.
We've seen Eben being very vocal. We've seen a lot of players given the comments being made in the media over the last 3 to 4 months, given the rivalry status has now been put on number one against number two, given the fact that we lost to Ireland in the Rugby World Cup, I think it's going to be massive. So for me, what Rassie has been incredibly good at throughout his tenure in the head realm of the Springbok setup is the alignment camps that he's been having constantly throughout every year. He's got a group of 39 players now together. It's just something happened. Everyone's on the same page. Everyone knows the thinking. Everyone knows their place, knows their job description. And they know what's going to be needed to make sure that this two-test series, which, let's be honest, who wants to do a two-test? Like, you want to do a threes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I want to see Portugal live in Bloemfontein, we could have maybe pushed another week on here.
Yeah, we could have, which is disappointing. I don't want it to be like the Lions series in 2017 where stalemate.
And then that's it.
Yeah, it won't be.
It won't be.
Okay, so final question on this. Jamison Gibson-Park not playing for the Irish. Who do you think is their sort of talismanic person that in a game as tough as this and as abrasive as this that will basically stand up and be that kind of guy who could be the spark?
I think it's going to be Pete O'Mahony. As captain, he brings a ruggedness and I want to say a very high level of grudge to any physical environment.
Yeah.
And from a Springbok perspective, we probably get easily agitated in the physical things, the off the ball stuff. Mm. And Pete O'Mahony is really good at that. And, you know, he'll rile the players up. I mean, the famous words that he said to Sam Kane, you know, you're the poor man's Richie McCaw.
That's crazy.
You know, a few years ago when...
Solid.
That's crazy. You know, as Springbok captain, it's pretty hectic. So, for me, I believe they're going to look to a talisman.
Yeah.
And Pete O'Mahony is definitely that. You know, 34 years old, being extended contractually with Leinster for you know, the next 2 years, probably going to be in the Lions set up there and thereabouts. They've probably got a Lions back row in the Lucys, you know, with Caelan Doris, Josh Van der Vlie and Pete O'Mahony. That's going to be good.
I think it's a
massive loss.
So I think that's why Quack is starting at 8.
Yeah,
100%. To maintain the intensity, because those guys are going to be incredible for 80 minutes.
Not only that, it's one of the reasons where we got found wanting in the pool stage game in the Rugby World Cup was at the breakdown. And you no longer have the big authoritative Dwayne Vermeulen in that position. Evan Ruiz may be a little bit wet behind the ears, which means that he, you know, might not. But someone like Quagga, as live wire energizer bunny as he is, his ability to be an absolute nuisance at the breakdown, that last minute penalty, well, the last 5 minute penalty that he got against, you know, New Zealand in that World Cup final. So Quagga's there with a specific role. And I probably did call it on Monday when I was chatting on the broadcasting call with Sky that Evan is great, but Quagga's probably going to be the man they get to replicate at least something that Dwayne Vermeulen was giving them. So it's going to be...
Okay, well, I'm not going to do the usual thing by saying, so, Brian Habana, ex-rugby legend, what do you think the score is going to be? Well, that's not important. I think it's going to be an incredible test. And I think playing, you know, I think abrasive environments like that also play into guys like Pete O'Mahony. This is like, this is where they want to play. They don't really want to play in nice places. Mm. They want to show why they're gritty.
Yeah.
They want to show why they have been classified as one of the best teams currently in the world. And I think they've got a great brand of rugby. So I think that's also one of the debates, right? Everyone sees South African rugby as this boring, stereotypical, physically abrasive, kick the ball, chase the ball, play off the opposition's mistakes. There's been a few law changes, which probably frustrates us as South Africans, taking away our impact of power at the scrum. So Frans Malherbe might have to go full tilt demolition in scrum one, because then the Irish might choose to take a free kick instead of the scrum option. But for the Irish, what better way to come to South Africa? And if they realistically want to be seen as the best team in the world, they'll know they'll have to come do it in South Africa.
Yeah.
Very much like they had to go to New Zealand and prove that they can mix it up with the best in the world. And in the cauldron that is Loftus-Versfeld, the cauldron that is an institution within South Africa where we don't lose much rugby, what better way as a visiting opposition team to say, yeah, we've come down and cracked it. So Durban next week, slightly, you know, less cauldron gladiatorial in terms of the environment. They probably go down to the beach to have a swim in the Indian Ocean.
Yeah, they should play no test matches there. It is far too nice.
If this pollution and situation in KwaZulu-Natal with our new government of national unity is coming to play.
Yeah.
But I think the Irish are coming here to set a proper understanding of where they are in world rugby. And like I say, they come to the party, the box are going to know with our second most experienced side to have ever graced a field post team that graced the Rugby World Cup final, yeah. it's going to be an absolute humdinger.
Incredible.
Brian, can I ask a question before Ben
jumps in? Let's not be the third wheel.
Everybody's got an issue with the new changes. We want to know, as fans, is it out to get us as Springboks, or is it generally to make the game more entertaining? That's, you know, that there's that big debate.
I would love to believe that it is really to try get the game to be more entertaining. You know, there's nothing more frustrating than time wasted or resets of scrums. Mm. I'm not going to lie to you. As a wing playing rugby on the 31st of December at 9 o'clock on a Sunday night in Paris, the last thing you want is 4 minutes of having to stand cold while you see forwards reset a scrum, right? So, no, I don't believe all the law changes have come in to try make South Africa's structure and gameplay less of an issue. They are unfortunately in a position, World Rugby, where they're trying to not only keep the very core group of rugby supporters that there is, and it's we're getting challenged massively with all sports globally, right?
100%.
In terms of attention to eyeballs, people on screens, streaming has created a very so people are now trying to, from a World Rugby perspective, trying to make the game more exciting to firstly win new fans, which is really important, particularly 100%. If you look at 2031, 2033, you know, World Cups in America, where you're needing to engage with different audiences. Trying to make the game faster, trying to make the game... Yeah, but yes, it does frustrate us. I'm going to be brutally honest. It does frustrate us because where you have these ardent, institutional, historic supporters, we are now needing to every year learn new rule changes to try to keep up with it. And the new fans that they're trying to encourage, you know, just lose any sort of enjoyment within the first 10 to 15 minutes. My biggest thing is rugby is always going to be a collision contact sport. You can never take that away. If we are going to take it away, we're going to lose the essence of what the values of rugby are. You know, the player welfare, I think, is really important. But I think for any player, coach, administrator, fan, the biggest thing we all want is consistency.
Yeah.
Rugby is probably the most difficult sport to referee.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, at every ruck, a referee's got to make anywhere between 6 to 8 decisions in the space of 3 to 4 seconds. Yeah. I mean, like, some of us struggle to know one decision in a minute, let alone that amount. And I think the consistency around refereeing, the manner in which referees are being dealt with, and as supporters, we actually want to know who's in charge. So is it now the TMO being in charge? How much influence can the TMO have? And the rule changes just continually confuse us, but then you look at, you know, someone like Anton Dupont, you know, Champions Cup final, kicks the most ridiculous 50-22, and yes, it was an absolutely monumental piece of individual brilliance, but if that hadn't happened in terms of the rule change, that not, like, would it have been as spectacular? Yes, it would have still been a spectacular kick, but it wouldn't have had the most spectacular outcome with Toulouse now getting that, you know, that, and it was brilliant. So I'd like to believe World Rugby are doing it for the betterment of rugby. Unfortunately, where it is impacting us is that it is, you know, taking away from what our potential strengths are. What I can, though, tell you is that if there's anyone that can bend those rules to suit us, it's got to be the puppet master, Rusty Rasmus.
That's exactly why I had no fear with that. He'll just find a new strength that people would be upset about. Okay, so with every guest on the show, Brian, of course, is the first. We give them 6 of the best. Well, thanks to Sandile this week, it's 5 of the best. So, Brad, to wrap up with some quick fire questions. Yeah. If you were
Are these one word answers or just rapid fire?
Up to you.
Up to you.
Okay. I'm not dictating how you answer these questions. You. Just if you were in your prime right now, lined up against Makazola Mapimpi, Kirtley Arensa, and Cheslin Kolbe, who would win that race?
So, okay, I would probably give Cheslin the first 10 to be the winner because he literally, he's off the mark, is brilliant.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a hypothetical length of the field run here.
So, hypothetical that, so I would
Cheslin out of the blocks first.
I would Cheslin out of the blocks first, but I'd 100% back myself against those. They are rapid, it would be extremely close. And it's probably comparing, you know, Wade van Niekerk and Akani Simbini over 200, you know.
No, this is just the world.
I'm going to back myself, right?
We're in a green screen studio. We can dream.
I'm going to back myself.
Because I always thought you had such great top end. Like when you first got into Jake White's team and that those runaway tries against Australia, that was that top end speed that no one's seen before.
So you back your guess.
I would, though. I mean, so in my prime, I'm probably about bench, don't listen, 10K is over my prime weight. But in my prime...
It's the camera adds 10, don't worry about it.
In my prime, I would probably love to maybe be a kilogram lighter, because I think like even Makazoli is maybe 90 kg. So in my prime, I was sort of between 93, 95 kgs weight. You know, Cheslin and Kirtley are both under 85. Makazoli is sort of around on the 90 mark. So I might have had to lose a kilo or two. But yeah, I reckon the first 10 I'd easily give Cheslin. But yeah, over 100, I'd back myself.
Nice. Sandhya?
I've already asked the first question, so I'm just going to jump into my second. You've had a legendary career. What is your all-time favorite, you know, Springbok moment or club, you know, club moment? You got to pick one.
It's pretty easy, right? Being able to reflect, I have a lot of moments,
yeah.
Both good and bad. But I think, and I say it always, like getting to represent South Africa for the very first time, 23rd of November 2004, when I sat at Ellis Park on the 24th of June 1995 and saw history being made possible in front of my eyes, you then all of a sudden dream of like I want to replicate that. I want to be there doing that. And I think when you work late at night, early in the morning, you know, you put in so much effort to try attain a dream, it's just so unrealistic that you can actually reach there one day. And if you had told me at the beginning of 2004 that 11 months later I'm going to be representing the Springboks, I would have probably laughed at your face.
Yeah.
If you had told me 6 months in July 2004 after representing South Africa in the U21 World Cup, if you told me in July I'm going to be in a Springbok group, and I'll never forget, my dad phoned me. I was driving back home from Rao after probably missing a lesson.
UJ for those
University
young ones.
University of Johannesburg. And my dad gave me this call. He said, listen, you need a call from John De Goslett. You know, he's the SA Rugby, you know, PR person. You're going to be included in the home series of the Tri Nations. I almost rolled my car laughing. I was like, Dad, come on, man, you're joking. You're 21 years old. Like, just you don't even, I wasn't even on the, I never made SA schools, never made SA under 19. You know, and then to actually run onto the field for the Springboks, 20th of November 2004, score a try with my first touch of the ball in international rugby. Understanding all that hard work, all the effort from yourself, your family, your loved ones, your friends, to get to that point. Jake White selected me before I'd ever played Super Rugby. You're scoring a try against the then world champions England at the home of rugby with your first touch in international football. You sort of look, I look back now and I'm like, that is just bonkers, right? But what I say to people is that that moment was so pride-filled in terms of your personal achievement. But what it then did give me was the understanding that I don't want to let this go. I want to do this for as long as possible. And it just makes you understand that this is like just the beginning. And then the need to then relook at your hard work, your effort, your dedication, your discipline, to try be there that, you know, contributes to become a 50-cap test player, to become a 100, you know, centurion cap player, to contribute successfully, to win a World Cup. So yes, through all the good times, the bad times, the moments, the enjoyments, that first time I got a spoil on that Springbok jersey, the realization of a dream, but the realization of what is needed to make that dream a living reality for as long as possible was pretty important.
Were you 94, 95 kgs at that moment? I don't think you were when you started.
Yeah, I was about 91, 92. Yeah, 91, 92. Yeah, bulked up.
A little bit.
Under 21.
Yeah. Muscles got more dense than experienced.
100%. Yeah.
Were you ever upset that you didn't have your own song at Loftus like Derek Hocott did?
Nah. I mean,
you scored some of the best tries that Ground's ever seen.
Nah, I mean, that didn't really bother me. I think Loftus, and I look back at Super Rugby, and I honestly believe that our generation got the best sort of entirety of the rugby ecosystem.
Yeah.
I mean, Loftus sold out, you know, 4 or 5 weekends in a row.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So no, I don't mind that I didn't have a specific song at Loftus being played when I scored a try. I mean, the fact that I had a song written about me by Bok van Blerk, not quite sure whether Derek and Mornay had their own song written about them. So
that's a clap back, Brian. Clap
I mean, we back. Can play an intro.
Yeah, clap back. I think, Brian, for me, I wanted to ask, you know, you mentioned your stuff at 21. You at your current age, what advice would you give your 18-year-old self, you know, now that you've achieved what you've achieved?
Myself and Ben have chatted about this quite regularly. I would really encourage my 18-year-old self to understand money better. And I know you pinch laugh, but you don't, when you're in that bubble, you don't understand how unrealistic it is. And I made some pretty stupid decisions. I bought a couple of million rand home at 21 years old, 5-bedroom. I didn't need stuff like that, right? There were certain things I just did very stupidly. I put the control of my finances into other people's, you know, positions, which was detrimental in certain ways, but it took very long for me to really grasp, you know, the amount of money that you get as a professional athlete at such a young age is mind-blowing, right? I go back now and I look at that time period and I'm like, I was at university, I was just wasting money. Mm. And now in the real world, you know, money is tough to come across. Yeah. So the biggest thing I would have given myself as an 18-year-old is make sure you understand finances, because it literally can make and break an athlete when they retire. I'm very fortunate that it hasn't broken me, but it's a constant worry for me, because you've come from such a high, such an incredible standard of living, and the real world is just so vastly different. I would not change anything bar the fact that work with your money better.
And if your 18-year-old self said, how do I get sick gains and become better at rugby?
So I love chatting about this, and I sometimes talk to it with young kids, because the reality is, and thanks John de Villiers for this stat, is that if you play schoolboy rugby in your final year of school, right, in matric, your chance of becoming a Springbok rugby player in the next decade, so next 10 years, is 0.00058%. So 3 0s, 58%. So think about it, since 1896, there's only ever been, there were two new ones, so I think there's only ever been 938 capped Springboks since 1896. So put that into context, right?
Wow.
In the last 20 years, I was Springbok number 766. So when I made my debut in 2004, I became Springbok number 766. In the last two decades, in the last 20 years, we have yet to have 200 people represent South Africa for the first time.
Wow.
So I tell people this in life, that I believe there's sort of certain things that you need to take into consideration if you want to be successful, no matter what you want to achieve, whether it be a professional athlete, whether it be an entrepreneur, dance, whatever it is, business, like whatever you want to be, there's sort of five key traits, I believe. So discipline is non-negotiable.
Yeah.
Sacrifice is non-negotiable. Perseverance and resilience are non-negotiable. And hard work. If you're not going to be willing to work hard, you're probably not going to be successful. The one thing none of us get to determine, and Gary Player says, the harder you work, the luckier you get, which I really believe is true. I think there's an add-on to that, that none of us decide luck. And sounds weird, but when luck arrives at your doorstep, that skill set of those five elements that you've then put to play give you the ability to grasp that opportunity with the best of both hands. I get asked quite a bit, who's the best coach I played under?
Mm.
And that's very subjective, unfortunately. Is it, you know, Jake White winning a World Cup? Is it Heineke Meyer becoming the first South African coach to win a Super Rugby? Is it Frans Ludeke, who replicated that with the Bulls 2 years in a row? Is it Peter de Villiers, who became the first South African coach to beat New Zealand 2 years in a row consecutively in New Zealand, beat the British and Irish Lions, beat New Zealand 3 times in 1 year to win Tri-Nations? Is it Alistair Couture, who took the Stormers to reaching a final for the first time ever, Western Province to winning a Curry Cup 12 years on from the last one? So best is very subjective. For me, it's very easy. The best coach was the one that selected me. And when I talk about luck, right, if Jake White had no right to select me out of total obscurity. I'd never played Super Rugby before. I'd played a handful of, you know, Curry Cup games.
I'm
so grateful to Jake for selecting me out of obscurity. You know, Heineke Meyer, 2012, after what I thought was my last appearance in Springbok jersey in 2011, you know, losing against Australia in that quarter final, I didn't think I was going to represent South Africa ever again. You know, Heineke Meyer, relationship again wise, came back to me, said he wants me to get back to where I was. Peter de Villiers in 2010, I actually went to him before that test in Bloemfontein, where I got booed off the field by 43,000 South Africans. And I went to Peter and I said, coach, listen, I don't, after this, got some stuff going on mentally, I just don't think I must play. And he goes, well, that's not your decision. And if Peter de Villiers hadn't selected me and backed and supported me in that time period when I was not going really well, I can without a doubt say that I would never have played 100 test matches for South Africa.
Incredible.
So the best coach, and that thing around Gary Player is, you know, yes, he says the harder you work, the luck you get. The thing is, luck doesn't just arrive. So you need to be able to pounce on that opportunity when it comes. And in business, it's the same. You know, you might be sitting in an airplane and just chatting to someone, and all of a sudden a business opportunity comes up, or you walk past. Like, none of us determine luck, but that skill set that I chatted about gives you that opportunity to then thrive. So I can't tell you who my best coach was.
Yeah.
You know, was it Eugene Iloff who moved me from scrum off to center? I probably would never have played Springboks if I stayed at the scrum off position. Yeah. I could, you know, try to uproot through the career, Ricky January.
Yeah, it'll be a tough era for that.
I'll even say someone like Michael Clarkson, who was the chosen Springbok on the interview tour when I made my debut. And Michael actually went on to make his debut on the wing against Wales. So the best coach I ever had was the one that selected me. But those five elements that allow you to then capitalize when luck arrives at your, you know, at your door, is what I believe makes people successful and what separates the good, because there's a lot of good, right? In the 99.1% or 99.9% that don't make it, the differential is just so small between good and great. And I'm lucky that I had that skill set, I had the support that allowed me to continually work and develop, but that I was then fortunate enough to become part of that 0.00058%.
Final question. Greatest rugby movie of all time.
Oh, have we seen it?
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for not picking Invictus. Thank you.
Let him speak. let him speak.
So, I mean, there hasn't unfortunately been a lot of rugby movies made. So Invictus is probably the most popular one. I do believe Chasing the Sun is probably the best.
Yeah, I mean,
rugby
that's
cinematography,
it's the best
that
rugby production ever.
Yeah. Yeah,
that is the Last Dance. Yes. Everything rolled into one best
and
thing.
Unfortunately, it hasn't got shown to the whole world because people, you know, it's not on streaming. You know, Super Sports gifted in house, so hopefully at some point we can get. But you know, Invictus gets a great story for us South Africans. When you watch that, Invictus doesn't give the true moment understanding of what happened in '95 and the real impact. I think having, you know, Matt Damon, Morgan Freeman's pretty cool. Clint Eastwood as director. But I do think if we want to compare cinematography from a rugby perspective to anything in the world, like a Chasing, you know, like a Drive to Survive, like a Last Dance, I just believe Chasing the Sun has portrayed authentic storytelling to which no other rugby, you know.
So what you're saying is you don't have a favorite rugby movie?
I mean, okay, bar Invictus, what rugby movies are there?
Oh, Brian, there's so many. Number 10 with Colin Moss. Absolute classic. Colin Moss and Mendoza play convincing rugby players. You can look at the screen right there.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, obviously,
you
Alive.
Just skip right through over there.
Okay, let's go. We go. Number 10.
There was
another one.
There was the movie Alive. That's more of like a maybe a slash hiking cannibalism movie.
Well, that's not nothing to do with rugby.
Well, it was a Uruguayan rugby team that went down.
Really?
But it had nothing to do with rugby.
The guys that were alive there, they're rugby players. It's a rugby team that went down.
Yeah, I hear you, but it's not a rugby-themed movie, right?
Okay, well, look, we're clutching a bit. Obviously, you didn't like Brighton Miracle.
I mean, we didn't talk about nightmares, guys. We talked about, like, the best rugby. We didn't talk about things that give you nightmares. I haven't been able to watch the replay of that game. What the hell would I be watching a documentary on it for? Jeepers creepers, we're not talking about nightmares, we're not talking about disasters.
I tell you what, the guy in Brighton Miracle is a pretty good Eddie Jones.
Did we say movies or horrors? Sorry.
So if there was a movie, say, on your meteoric rise, who would you like to play that character? Who is the actor?
Probably a few years ago would have said Will Smith, but that has unfortunately probably changed now. You know who I think would do me really well? Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yes.
Cuba Gooding, okay.
And he's got the heritage, right?
He's any got given the Sunday. NFL, yeah.
Sorry, Jerry Maguire.
Yeah. Show me the money.
Okay. I can see it.
Cuba Gooding Jr. Very similar.
Unfortunately, he's a bit old now, so he would play retired you. But in his prime, he would have been the absolute guy to play you.
100%. No, I mean, any given Sunday.
Because I just think Invictus was great, as you said, but it's a bit of an injustice to our players that the smallest oak in the field was Francois Pino.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they should, at some stage, they should do a proper rugby movie again.
Yeah, they should. But so, we all love rugby. And I think in South Africa, we probably love it a lot more than anywhere else in the world, given what it's given back to 100%. Us as a country, right? I think the difficulty that rugby currently sits in is we're not a global sport.
Yes.
Mm.
We don't talk to a global audience. So there's elements of rugby speaking to a global audience. We don't get played. So yes, rugby sevens is an Olympic sport, yeah. which is brilliant. That's mm-hmm. a very different format of the game. The rugby we know and love might potentially become obsolete, like five-day cricket, now, if we yeah. don't change it, because you know we're not going to territories. So 2019 probably had the best opportunity for rugby in Asia to boom. Unfortunately, COVID then happened, which you know put everything back a bit. Rugby in America, you know, is trying to get to that point of growth. It's apparently the sleeping giant. I'm quite sure the giant's going to be woken up from his slumber.
There's a lot of sleeping giants there. There's a cricket one as well, apparently.
A lot of sleeping giants. So we need to try get rugby becoming a global sport that talks to a global audience, that excites our current fan base.
Yeah.
But encourages a new fan base to love our sport.
Yeah. But again, it's like, you know, earlier, right at the start of the interview, you spoke about balance. And I think balance is a fallacy. I think it's one of those things that movies try to tell you. And I don't think rugby should be a global game. The moment we become global, suddenly there's new tackle laws. You can't take a run up and hit the guy with a shoulder. Yeah. If everybody wants, like, people want to make things inclusive because they keep seeing this whole thing about being global and being huge. Yeah. I really disagree. I mean, I just think that get the right countries together. There's more than enough brands that want to be involved in it and keep it, as you said as well, true to its contact roots. If we want everyone to play this game,
but then it becomes a dying sport.
They're going to mess up the rules.
And if we take any contact sport, so boxing, right? Not many parents are probably going to want their kids boxing.
Yeah.
But boxing's still massive.
Yeah.
If we look at what UFC has grown into over the last two decades, when I made my Springbok debut, UFC, you're like...
What's
that? Guys are crazy. Now you have, you know, Trickus du Plessis putting South Africa on the map, you know, from an MMA UFC perspective. And it is a collision environment. You know, people die, unfortunately, in certain elements of contact sport. And there is unfortunate repercussions from the physical contact collisions that constantly happen within rugby. And that's something we've seen become detrimental. You know, there's a group of over 200 players taking world rugby and certain federations to task around, you know, post-career concussion and various detrimental mental issues, which is a real life threat.
Yeah.
And because rugby isn't a global sport, you know, because we don't have the fan base of football, of golf, of Formula One, like, it's going to be this constant challenge. So where do we take rugby to? I think it needs to really try and understand what is its core values. How do we really put player welfare at the forefront,
right?
But do so without detrimentally impacting.
Yeah, that is a fine balancing act.
That's unfortunately where balance does come into it, because we don't want to, you know, we don't want to change what rugby is.
Yeah,
we want to improve it in certain aspects. Yes, to engage a new audience. Yes, to keep the audience that is really established still involved. But it's difficult because it is this element of contact, and you know, my boys play rugby at school now, and I bet Gabriel, my six-year-old, he played a sort of grassroots rugby, and like 6 years old, they're tackling.
Yeah.
And he does, fortunately enough, like myself and wife, have a bit of pace. So I bet him that, you know, if he scores a try, I'll buy him a rugby ball. Yeah. You know, all of a sudden, he goes on and scores five, and I'm like, oh, I don't have the money for that anymore.
rugby ball and a net.
Rugby ball and debt. And then he gets tackled. And like, as a parent, your first thing, you know, as his head hits the ground is, he's actually hurt himself.
Yeah.
You know, and then comes off crying as a six-year-old. And you're like,
oh, that's minus three balls.
Yeah, minus three, probably. but the reality is we sit in this environment where rugby is always a contact sport. Do we want to remove the contact? I don't think so. Do we want to make sure that player welfare is a top priority? Yeah. Always. But when there's contact, safety is a balancing act.
I mean, look, I think we've made good improvements. I think the head-high tackles and stuff, 100%. Sure, we'll definitely get there.
Consistency, right? So as fans, even head-high tackles, in a split-second movement, in a change of direction, to now, unfortunately, penalise players for that with rugby being in contact. So it's this juggling act, because it can't be balanced, unfortunately. It's going to be a juggling act. But for all of us, if there's consistency, I think we'd become a lot more comfortable with the constant changes. It's the inconsistency through the rule changes that frustrates us.
Sure, and that'll alienate the diehard fans, and it won't exactly attract the new ones either.
Yeah.
Brian, we're going to have to wrap it up there because Sandile and I need to get into talking football. I mean, into talking betting, because this is what we're really, really good at on the show. If you've been watching the last few weeks.
I'm going to remove myself from the betting conversation.
Brian, thanks so much for joining us today. You are our first guest by choice, and it's been really great to have you. I hope you have a great time on the sidelines this weekend. Go Boca. I know you've got to be diplomatic when you're on TV.
100%. I do, especially talking to a UK audience, right? But you can be diplomatic while still being patriotic.
100%. Well said. Like a true GMU.
Well said. Alrighty. We're coming back with all our calls for the weekend. Of course, what you can look into and a great game that Clip Drift is allowing all fans to get a part of this weekend. Welcome back. Yeah, I put a jacket on. You know, now that Brian's gone, and put some more clothing on. Yes. It's cold in here. Also, like, how sweet's our merch this week, huh?
Shout out to the plug.
Yeah, we got these. So obviously, Adidas is a huge sponsor within the Euros. So all, like, the best teams.
Yeah.
Spain, Germany, and it is the biggest game for this weekend, right?
100%.
But before we get into the Euros, we've got to talk some rugby. I know we just had Brian Habana, Springbok legend, in the studio. Sandile is still on such a high.
Yeah, man.
But speaking of Bok legends, there's this really cool game that Clipdrift kind of launched as part of the That's Gold campaign. So if you go on to clipdriftthatsgold.co.za right now, every game that the Bok play, you get a chance to pick a player. Now, when I say pick a player, you go on there, you register your details, and you get a chance to spin for a player. And what then happens is that you get a player, and on the match day, you can score points through the person. So ultimately, you want to try and spin the wheel. So you need 20 points to spin the wheel. So if your player scores a try, conversion, penalty, so obviously you want to pick Andre here, if you can. But there's also minus points. So if they go off injured or if they get a red card. So if you pick a player and the guy goes and scores those points, great. After the match, you can then spin for a prize. When I registered yesterday, I got Malcolm Marks. Malcolm is not starting this week. He's going to come off the bench and he'll get man of the match, I hope. Man of the Match award does get you some more points. Yeah. James, you also signed up this week. Who did you get?
I did. I got this guy, Gerard Steenkamp.
Gerard Steenkamp. Gerard's got either a hectic bar rash or he's been scrumming in the sun all week.
Jeez, come on, guys. Pick a better picture for my guy right there.
No, I mean, it's a really cool game. So there's so much to get excited about with Bok Rugby right now, right? So you go on and you play this game, and then ultimately you got a player to go into. Okay, Sandile, you haven't signed up yet, or you have signed up. So
I've signed up. I'm about to do the spin and win now, hopefully.
Okay, go for it to see who you get.
Just give me a second. Awesome. Jeslin Colby. So I'm definitely winning this game. You guys are in a lot of trouble, and I'll give you feedback next week.
I'm happy for you. I'm happy for you. So yeah, if you go to Clipdrift, that's gold, the Seattle City, you can do exactly the same. And if you, like James and I, don't have the best players that start, you get extra points for watching the video. You get extra points for sharing online as well, so that you can get a spin either way.
Awesome.
And of course, Sandile is going to get like two tries. That's big points. Anyway, it's cool. But this is what I was saying at the start of the show.
Yeah.
If you're ever down about anything in the world, Springbok weekend, there is so much to be excited about.
Yeah, it's 100%. It's going to be awesome.
Hugely, hugely excited about this, obviously, at Loftus at 5 o'clock. All right, so. Oh, well said, James. There is also the On The Bounce pool, because within this game, you can join pools. So there'll be a variety of them. We've created the On The Bounce pool, so you can see who does best out of all of us.
100%.
We're not giving you a prize. Clipdrift are giving away already so many prizes. Already. We don't. Yeah, actually, I'm pretty sure, Sandile, they would like our kit. People would like this, huh? They would like our...
Well, they'd love our merch,
They'd love our merch. Okay, so we need to get into it because, as you know, we always wrap up the show with our Superbets picks. And as you also know, they haven't been so flash the last few weeks. But I think the Euros have been really unpredictable.
100%.
Now, we had some pretty confident picks last week. And then, you know, games end in draws. Some teams just don't pitch up. Yep. Austria finds a way to lose. So, I mean, this is the nature of playing, right?
100%.
And this is what we always say. So, Sandile, let's start with you. Let's go into the quarters, have a little look, and then obviously you get your picks and why you're choosing them and obviously what the odds could be if you're putting a bet on that.
I'm going to start with the battle of the snooze fests, as I'll call it. I've got the France game.
Okay.
Look, France and you know, they've played terribly. Portugal have just snuck through everything. I've got France because I think class will always come through.
Okay.
And the best players are going to do that. Definitely got France.
That's Friday 9 o'clock game.
Yes, Friday 9 o'clock game, The France game, and then I've got the England game, another battle of the snooze fests. England versus Switzerland. Switzerland have played awesomely, but I think like England have been doing throughout the tournament, just figuring ways to get it done. Like I said, Jude Bellingham, Harry Kane. So I've got England on that one. The next
that's
one I've got
Saturday 9 o'clock with that
Saturday
kickoff.
9 o'clock.
It's great of you to always go in the most haphazard of orders.
Of course, that's my way. I've got the Netherlands Turkey game. Sorry guys for going haphazard. You're just gonna have to stick with me on that one.
So that's Saturday at 6.
Saturday at 6, I've got the Netherlands game. And I've got Netherlands because they've been playing awesomely. And you know what? This is one of the best calls I have made throughout the week and all and throughout the tournament. Sleeper team, Gakpo has been playing amazing. I've got Netherlands winning that.
You did say. You said right from the start, Netherlands were your dark horse team. Mm. And Turkey, let's not go with this Turkey business.
They've got to get out of this tournament. They beat Austria, but they play so great. But I've really got, you know, Netherlands, with how they've been playing up front, expansive football. Netherlands, let's go.
Okay, I was trying to make a separate point, but yeah, steamrolling.
Oh, sorry. No, make the point.
Sorry, no, this whole thing about like Turkey and Czechia and all this kind of stuff, everyone's name is in English. That's like Germany just suddenly going, no, guys, we're Deutschland. This is it. So, I mean, Erdogan decides that he wants to call Turkey to great, awesome. But sure. Guys, it's a standardized thing here.
100%.
It's a bit weird. And I feel for those commentators because the guy's like, Turkey have been so fantastic on the front. As you can see, Turkey. Oh, sorry, hang on a second. Turkey. Guys, they're just English words. We're a bit better for worse. Wars were fought. We just use the English anglicized version of these things for standardization.
100%. Please don't judge me.
I don't know why I needed to get off my chest.
Why has this been bothering you?
Look, let's get to your next game, which is the biggest game and the first game for the weekend, Friday, 6 o'clock.
Our game.
Our game.
What should have actually been the final. I'm going to back my favorites, as I said throughout the tournament. This is the Tony Cruz farewell show. This is going to Germany. It's going to be tight. It's going to be a 2-1, but I'm going with Germany.
All right. Now, are you not worried about the attacking prospects of the Spanish, my team?
No, German engineering, they're great from back to the front. So I really have Germany going through. I think they might actually cruise through it. And it's definitely Germany with.
If you love Tony Kroos as much as Sandile over here, then this is also the bet for you. Okay, Sandile, look, if I go through all of that for you right now, it's a pretty good bet as well. So you're going to get 20 back on the odds there.
Yeah.
So that's like, what, $100 down? Why is my math so bad today?
On 100?
You're like 2,000 back?
Yeah, shut up.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's a pretty good bet. It's pretty handsome. And again, not like completely out of the way. I will counter your bet here. I agree with you.
Oh, word?
No, of course I don't. Spain are going to beat Germany. That's what I'm going to say. But on your bets in particular, what I would say is I think France-Portugal is a draw. Because a lot of people forget, you know, that when you are playing on these markets, if the team wins in penalties, it's a draw. If they win an extra time, it's still a draw.
Yeah.
So all the things you're on the outcomes are always going to be 90-minute outcomes.
Cool.
So I'm not telling you to ever change what you say.
Thank you.
But I reckon France-Portugal after 90 minutes is going to be one of those times where the physios come on, the rub downs, the hydration, they will go to extra time.
Sweet.
But that's your call. I mean, I'm obviously incredibly excited about the semis next week. And if I were to pick my teams just based who I'd like to see, I'd like to see Spain, France, Netherlands, and England. Yeah. I want to see in England because the drama that comes with it.
Oh, we just...
It's fun. And people like seeing them lose. That's what fans want.
Yeah. But Jude Bellingham, you know, that's my guy, and I've backed him throughout the tournament. So definitely they'll be through in the, you know, in the semifinal.
All right, so it's a great rugby weekend this weekend. Of course, there is the Currie Cup starting, but most importantly, a whole bunch of internationals from Friday all through to Saturday night. The big ones to worry about for this weekend. So New Zealand, they've just announced a new team under new coach, Scott Robertson. It's a New Zealand team. You're going to get exactly what you expect there. It's going to be hugely exciting. They're going to be dynamite with the ball in hand. They're taking on an English team who are on tour.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you go historically look back anywhere, English people on tour, they do terribly and they embarrass themselves.
Yep.
No difference here. Australia are going to be hosting a Welsh team. They just took a bit of a hammering from a box side.
Yep.
Australia, I mean, like, no one cares about rugby in Australia, rugby union, that is. So I always get quite astonished they got a competitive team, but they should be better.
Yeah.
Some of the teams are pretty good in that Super Rugby Pacifica, apparently. And that Welsh team, as we know, is young, inexperienced, so I would go with Australia. So then we've got SA versus Ireland. What a game, as Brian was talking about there.
Rivals.
It's a rivalry, whether we like it or not. These guys are good. So therefore, you want to beat the best to be the best.
100%.
And then we've got Argentina against France. Now, France, they don't tour with their players. Mm. It's like in the Champions Cup, the Investor Champions Cup, they didn't really put anyone out. It's like, you guys go fun, go tour. We don't care about the result. Yeah. I don't think the best team is going to be in Argentina. So if I were to make a pick there, obviously, it's a very boring bet. I'm getting a really bad habit of always going with boring bets on the show, but all the home teams there. So I'm back in New Zealand, Australia, SA to win. They'll give me odds of 188. So 100 down, 288 back. Of course, they're all subject to change, but that's what our outline looks like.
Yep.
Now, if you are new to playing, If you go on superbets.co.za and use the sign-up code OTB on the bounce, just OTB the initials, all you need, you get up to 5,000 Rand back in deposit bonuses. So there is no better time to get involved and have a bit of play on all of these things. And hopefully Sandile and I can inspire you into just backing some teams. 100%. Or if you obviously disagree with us, even better.
They've been giving us hell in the comments.
Even better. That's fine. That's totally fine. So this weekend, just to wrap up, amazing sporting weekend. All the Test rugby. We got the Curry Cup. We got the Euro quarterfinals. The British Grand Prix. Let's just talk quickly about the British Grand Prix. And again, like, I was one of those sort of like on the fence fans. I know enough and I watch a bit.
100%.
This thing after last week, that Austrian Grand Prix was brilliant.
Like, that is the most entertaining race I've watched. You know, just chaos everywhere. Who's going to win? Who's going to finish? It was awesome. And all you Max haters, you guys only get one in a season, and this was the race.
Well, it's given two technically, but yes, it's incredible how the two best drivers kind of took themselves out. Lando completely out, Max still hung on for some points.
Yeah.
And then out of nowhere, I love that moment, because if you're Toto Wolff now as the Formula One Supremo, right? He used to be in the driver's seat. Lewis was always winning. They were always winning. Now I reckon this soaks like talking to the interns, probably having a cigarette out the back. Yeah. His teams are in it.
Yeah.
And the way that he came onto the team microphone was so funny. It was like, George, I think you can win, George.
I think you can win, George.
There was so much excitement in his face, because the two best guys went off. Suddenly George Russell in the mix. He went on to win. And obviously Silverstone, the British Grand Prix, it's kind of like, I know this sounds weird, but it's Mercedes' kind of home race.
Yeah.
Because George Russell, Lewis Hamilton, British guys, cars looking good, McLaren's looking good, Red Bull are Red Bull.
Yeah.
It's a hugely exciting Grand Prix to get into. And then Wimbledon, we are obviously in the first week of Wimbledon. And my guy, Yannick Sinner, is looking strong. Sandile's guy,
King Carlo, just cruise control. Once again, just playing absolutely amazing tennis. Hopefully our fairs push all the way to the end.
Yeah, which they will. Well, they seeded 1-3. So we're looking like another French Open rematch here at the semifinal.
Yeah.
And of course, Tour de France. Now, if you don't like cycling, that's fine. But if you like, if you don't like the other sports, and if you like European scenery, and you can't afford to go to Europe, it is like a holiday on your TV. The best landscapes, the most amazing winding roads. It is so cool to watch that kind of stuff. And some of the strategy goes into that. I think a lot of people don't understand that cycling is actually an incredible team sport.
Yeah.
And how they kind of get the guys to the front. Anyway, that's also on the mix. It's another great sporting weekend. It's awesome, another great time to be alive right now in sport. Yeah. And that wraps up this week's show. James, did we miss anything? Do we leave anything out?
Mark Cavendish, he is now the winningest tourist.
James, let's not showboat us. Let's not showboat our cycling knowledge.
Thank you.
James,
you
missed
for
anything.
Wasting 30 seconds of our listeners' lives.
Okay. All righty. That's it. Catch you back next week. Obviously, Brian was our first guest. We're going to have more guests as we go. And with that, some incredible, exciting topics of conversation. And I'm so cold.
I'm freezing.
Let's wrap up the show right now.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks for joining us.